Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have a delicious, well, we'll have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent ones, including this one, when we get finished, will be archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, and the rest of them are archived on the radio station at www.blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Okay, thanks. Now let's get started. Now this show, we're going to do something a little bit different. Instead of problem solving, we're going to talk about our successes. And a lot of times we get lots of emails. Thank you all for sending in all kinds of information and emails and all kinds of questions. That's how the shows are created, from the questions that are sent in. And we get lots of emails of people telling us that they really used the concepts of Recipe for Peace Now, and they used mediation concepts, and they had a potluck, and they had a success. And you know what? I didn't think about holding up a whole show on success until one of our friends named Maria sent in an email, and she said something particularly wonderful. She said that she was so energized and delighted by her success in bringing community groups together to clean up their neighborhood as a joint effort. Oh, I'm reading this, and I'm reading it badly, aren't I? Hello. She was so delighted that she had a community group get together to clean up her neighborhood, and it was such a success that her psoriasis cleared up. And I went, wow, we're having a health show. Mediation and getting people together and really forming accord and consensus and having a success and getting something done is good for you. It's good for your health. Our psoriasis cleared up. We all know that psoriasis is a skin rash that I guess is caused by nervousness. Yes, thank you already for everybody who is chiming in. Thank you for participating. I love to have you. And yes, psoriasis, I gather, is caused by nerves. People are saying that they've seen it, they've had it. And yes, it is caused by stress is what it's really caused by, among other things, I gather. And her psoriasis cleared up after she had a successful cleanup of her neighborhood by getting community groups together. She said she had a joint effort with several groups, and her psoriasis cleared up. It's like, wow, that's wonderful. It's good for your physical health. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about some examples of successes, what we've done that has worked, not just what we've done that has not been so successful. Instead of problem solving, we're going to celebrate our successes this evening. And, you know, we've had some already examples because the announcement of what the topic is going to be shows up on the radio show website up there so in advance. And people have already sent in, and I've had some other emails also, that people have sent in success stories. And, you know, Dory says that she created a political action group after getting together on a different community action issue, but they were so good at reaching accord that they actually created a political action group, and they actually made an organization with the people who had been at different community groups who had gotten together and made consensus. And that's wonderful. That's just how it's supposed to work. We network, we meet each other, we go, look, we can get along. We can reach consensus on this. We will work together again because it has been successful. Yes, what a wonderful idea. And Hammond says, thank you, by the way, for all of you, for all of your participation. Hammond says that the idea is you know who to call to create change. You know who to call, who to contact, who to say, let's get together again. It was so successful, and we made a change. We made a difference. We reached accord and consensus, and we moved forward towards a common goal. Let's do it again. We know who to get together, who the movers and shakers are going to be. Mm-hmm. And, well, this is very nice. Look, we're not only it's not only healthy to follow Recipe for Peace Now principles, but it's also good for your social life. Anna says that she met the person she is now dating during a Recipe for Peace Now inspired community get-together. There you go. She networked successfully and met somebody who she could really make a accord with, right? Really have a consensus with, someone she could get along with. And they're dating now. How nice. Congratulations to you, Anna. How nice for you. And several people have actually chimed in now. And Jocelyn and others say that they made great new friends. And Jocelyn says that not only has she made, did she meet people that she wouldn't ordinarily have met, because she would have thought that they were of different mind than she was, but she also actually has gotten some employment with them. And Jocelyn says that she's actually house-sitting for one of the people that she met when they were reaching consensus, when they were trying to create change, trying to get to a common goal. Wonderful. Those are extras. Not only do we make a success of the issues that are before us, but we have a personal interaction that flourishes afterwards. We can have a group, a political action group, and we've got people we know what to call, and we might meet someone who we might be interested in, and you can make great new friends. What a wonderful idea. And now quite a few people are saying, Clay and others, thank you for your input, thank you for participating, that many studies indicate that feeling enthusiastic and in control positively affects physical health. Feeling enthusiastic and in control positively affects physical health. Well, I think that's like Maria psoriasis, isn't it? Now, of course, we can't all have something really, really visual, really, well, like a rash that goes away. I know psoriasis is more than a rash. People are saying it's more than a rash. Of course it is. But something that we can actually literally see. But it affects our physical health because it makes us feel better, right? It makes us feel that we have accomplished something. We feel enthusiastic and can control, and that's a positive thing. Yes, thank you, Clay. That's a very good point that you've made. He has quite a few citations. I'm not going to read them off. Thank you very much for doing that. They are, he says that you can Google it and you'll find that there are many studies that indicate that. Excellent. And there's quite a few people like Chelsea and others who are telling us that negative feelings will create a negative outcome. Well, yeah, but it's kind of like, and people are mentioning the concept of self-fulfilling prophecy again. Yes, if you go in with an enthusiastic and positive attitude, and we always stress that, then you will have a better outcome. You have more potential for a better outcome because you say, look, we are working towards something. We are handling it. We are going forward, and what's the key word? We will succeed. We will succeed. We're going to make it. This is going to work out. We will succeed. And if you come out in with a negative attitude, there is a real good chance that it won't succeed. Remember all of our talk? We had an entire show, actually, on self-fulfilling prophecy. And quite frankly, well, you can have a negative self-fulfilling prophecy. Chelsea is absolutely right, and everyone else. And you know, this is you're all so smart, because I was going to mention this, and you've all gotten there before I have. Arthur and others and Jocelyn and have said that positive and negative outcomes are a matter of interpretation. Yes, isn't that an interesting point? Positive and negative outcomes are a matter of interpretation. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that sometimes, and we know this from real life, from doing these kind of mediations, seminars, workshops, get-togethers, groups, issues that need to be resolved between groups so that you can go for whatever it is you're doing, that sometimes it's not a clear success. It may not be 100%, but it's not a failure either. We have reached a compromise, perhaps, or we can go forward, but in a little different direction than we thought we were going to have. And so it's a matter of interpretation, too, as to whether we are optimistic and have been successful, or we have not been successful, and we've had a negative result. And, of course, we want to interpret as much positive outcome as we can, because, yes, several people are saying that if you interpret a positive outcome, you will be able to try again, because you'll start from a position of strength, won't you? A position of enthusiasm, a position of we have gotten this far, therefore, we will keep going. We will keep trying. We have been successful to a certain extent, and now we're going to go the rest of the way. That's why I think where the interpretation comes in, doesn't it? We can interpret that we have gone halfway. We've got a halfway success. Instead of we didn't get this done, look at all we got done. Shame to waste it. Let's go further. Let's go forward. It's positive and negative outcomes are a matter of interpretation. That's a really interesting thought. And we want to interpret in a positive manner, optimistically. Yes. You know, it's kind of like the test where they show you a picture of a glass of water. And you're supposed to say if it's half empty or half full. I think it was a Peace Corps test. Is that true? You guys can tell me. And there was a psychological concept. I don't know if they still do it or not. This is probably very old-fashioned. But there was a psychological idea that if a person said the glass was half full, then they would be a real good candidate for the Peace Corps. People are saying it's other groups, and people are agreeing that it's the Peace Corps. So whatever group it was, but it was a psychological test about whether you would be a good person to go out into the field and to really get the job done and create positive change in the world. And if you said from the picture of the glass that it was a glass that was half full, psychologically they felt that you would be a good candidate, because you had an optimistic viewpoint of the world. And if you said it was a glass that was half empty, you see, it's the same glass, right? It's halfway. If you said it was half empty, then the idea was that you would not be a good candidate for making change in the world, because you would have a negative attitude and see failure. So that was a kind of a psychological theory. People are saying that it was a psychological test that was given some years ago. Yes, but you see the idea. You can look at the same result, the same picture, the same idea, the same picture of a glass that is half filled with water, And you can look at it and say, that is a glass that is half full. We are almost to full. Or you can say, you can think that is a glass that is half empty. We have not made it to full. It is half empty. We have lost full, you see. And it's a matter of interpretation and a matter of optimism and psychological thought. And, of course, we are all half full type people, aren't we? We're going to try to be so, because that will give us a more optimistic, a more success oriented outlook towards the outcome. Yes. And Lamb says the idea is to look for success, and it's not always obvious or complete. Success is measured by progress and steps forward, not necessarily the end result. Very good point, Lamb, and very nicely spelled out. Success is measured by progress and steps forward, not necessarily the end result. You see, that's the idea, half full. We might not have gotten the actual conclusion, the actual end result that we were intending, that would have been perhaps ideal. But we made steps forward. We made progress. And that's the basis when we start again, when we go forward, when we reconvene. We don't start from nothing. We start from the success of going forward as far as we went. And we move on from there. We move up. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, a lot of people, Felicia and others, are saying that progress is the key to happy results, even if it's not yet finished. And if you feel that you've accomplished something, it has a positive personal impact. Yes, the idea of accomplishment, of knowing that you've accomplished something, has a positive impact on the whole group, doesn't it? Because you're in it together. You have gone and progressed together. You may have made a tremendous breakthrough if you have truly adverse groups and complex issues. A tremendous breakthrough is oftentimes being able to sit in the same room and discuss the issues. It might not be something that had been done before. And to get the viewpoints out in the open, out on the table, so to speak. That may be a tremendous step forward. Now, did you actually reach conclusion and consensus? Yeah, the answer is no, right? I've seen a lot of people agreeing that no, you didn't exactly get to the end, but you've made a good stride forward, haven't you? And sometimes these things take a little while. They take more than once. They take more than twice. They take a process, a progression. And Kimberly and others are saying that makes you want to try again and not give up. That's the idea. It makes you want to try again and not give up. And you've already got a relationship with the other parties. The parties on the other side of the issue. You've already got a relationship. And that's the idea. And I guess the next question that we're going to think about is, not all of us, of course, are natural optimists, right? In fact, a lot of times we don't feel all that optimistic. And so the next question that I'm going to pose is this interpretation, this example of positive attitude, is this a learned behavior? Can we learn how to do this? Can we consciously look for a success, have a positive attitude towards, well, I'm going to call it towards the process, have a positive attitude towards what we're trying to accomplish? Is that learned behavior? And I see, well, actually, I've got people on both sides. Some people are saying that No, Leonard and others are saying that no, it is not learned behavior, that some people have a more optimistic attitude. It is their nature. It is a characteristic of their nature. But others are saying yes, and that optimism is a conscious choice. And it's just like pessimism is a conscious choice, that you make a conscious choice to be optimistic and to look for success. And to interpret the progress in a positive manner. And I think, at least for the sake of argument to this show, we're going to go with the yeses. We're going to say that positive attitude is a learned behavior, and we can have a conscious choice to be optimistic, to think about things in a positive way. And, you know, Rodney and others, but Rodney says that both positive and negative feelings are a direct result not of the events that happened, but the way in which we habitually interpret and respond to the events. It's a direct result not of the events that happened, but of the way we habitually interpret and respond to the events. Now, that is learned behavior, isn't it, right? That our response is important as whether or not is interpreted in a negative or positive way. And, of course, it is oftentimes not just our response as individuals, right, but also the response of the group, of the other people. And we want to turn it to be an optimistic response. And, you know, a lot of people are mentioning the word stress, and that stress can actually make you physically ill and can keep you from trying to form a consensus. Because you get kind of, well, you know, there's an expression. I know this is a global show, and it's kind of an American expression. But there's an expression called stressed out. It means that you have a great deal of stress and you kind of let it take over and become pervasive, and it keeps you from thinking clearly and being optimistic and from pushing forward in a positive manner because you feel personally unsure and stressed. Yes? Stressed out. Yes, you all say that you understand what that means. Yes. And that happens sometimes, doesn't it? And it can get in the way of our forming a positive attitude and being optimistic. And so now, let's think about that for a minute. Is optimism a learned behavior? What do you think? A positive slant on things. Which is optimism, I suppose, but is optimism a learned behavior? Or are some people just kind of optimistic? And I've gotten a lot of people are saying, yes, optimism can be conscious. You can kind of insist on being optimistic and move towards consensus because of it. Now, how can we do that? Let's think about that for a moment. If this is a learned behavior and we can make a conscious choice to do it, then how, on a practical matter? How, you know, not all of us are optimists by nature, and quite frankly, it depends. Oh, look, I use that term again. You all say I say it depends all the time, but I do. It depends on the circumstances, right, on the events, as Rodney would say, on the circumstances. Because sometimes, well, it's kind of harder, and the issues are more complex, and the parties are further apart. And you might not be feeling as optimistic as you could be. And so what is it that, if you want to learn how to be an optimist, if you want to learn to have a positive attitude and see a success, how can we do such a thing? We've got quite a few. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you very much. We have a lot of people participating at this time. And here we've got a lot of suggestions. Oh, this is wonderful. Some of them are something that quite frankly, I would not have particularly come to my mind. I always learn something on these shows, and I hope that you do too. Yes, wonderful. You know, Isaac and others have said, and a whole bunch of people are saying, that you have, in order to have a positive attitude and look for success, you need to practice it daily in all aspects of your life. Well, now that's kind of a tall order, but you can't exactly turn it on when you hit the group, the mediation, the seminar, whatever it is you're doing, and then go, well, that was stressful, and turn it off. You do indeed need to have rather a positive life outlook that can, of course, be cultivated and consciously thought about. Yes? So it's a good point. Practice daily in all life aspects. And, you know, Magda has an interesting point here that I bet is very valid, and you all can think about this. Thank you for all of your participation. It's very nice. Very nice to have all of you. She says that one way to get a more positive outlook in your life is to team up with an optimist. That's a good point. You can make friends with somebody and go with them and team up with somebody who is a positive thinker, who sees things in a positive success mode way, to team up with an optimist. What a good idea. You make friends like that too. This is good. And William and others are saying that you can ask the group to find the positive. Ah, it's a team effort, right? We're all working towards consensus. We're all working towards a common goal. We're not just doing it all by ourselves and trying to pull the others along with us. No, we're in it together. We're all going up the path together towards success and towards whatever it is that we need to do to reach consensus and to effectuate change or whatever it is that we want, right? Right. And so you can ask the group to find the positive, to find the success. We can talk about the successes that we've had, right? We can talk about the positive elements that have come out of our getting together, out of our relationship. And we can move forward from there. What a good idea. Ask the group. Because it's a group event. If there's teamwork involved, ask the group. Good idea. And, you know, as a corollary to William's concept of ask the group, Karen says you can ask for recommendations on how to proceed. Ask for recommendations on how to proceed and get more success. Yes, and yes, I'm going to say the phrase that you all say that I say all the time, it depends, because you don't want to get sidetracked, but you do want everyone's opinion as to how to get to consensus and successfully and positively reach an outcome, reach a good outcome. So, you know, that's a good point, that you can ask for recommendations. And people are saying that you can actually ask an impartial third party, like an expert, to make recommendations, to come and visit the group and see where you've gotten kind of, well, a little bit off the path, shall we call it, and how to get you back into success mode. Interesting point. It depends, of course, how complex the issues are. If there is money for an expert, somebody who can come in, if you have enough time. And other practical items that to what you're trying to accomplish. You might have an expert come in. You know, you have to think about what it is that you need at the time to go forward to make success. Now, quite a few of you are talking about, in order to have success and optimism and see success, that you must have inner peace within yourself. You must be an optimistic person in order to see success with our meetings, with our gatherings. That's an interesting point. I see a lot of people using the concept of meditation and saying that you need to have inner peace. Now that's an idea. You need to be at peace, well, at peace within yourself, right, in order to feel optimistic. And, you know, I think that's a good point, actually. Now, here's something that I actually would not particularly have thought of about inner peace. We're talking about, in order to have a success and have a positive attitude and to go forward in an optimistic way, you have to have an inner idea, a inner peace, we're going to call it, so that you can effectuate it with others, so that you can have, well, I suppose, so that you can have outer peace. Yes, people are saying you can have inner peace makes outer peace. That's an interesting thought. But, and I don't know about a specific way to get it. A lot of people are mentioning meditation. It's an interesting thought. And consciously holding a positive attitude. But, you know, Philip and a lot of other people have said something that I actually did not think of, and I'm just going to say it because it's come up. It's not what we usually think of on being success and optimistic and pushing the group forward towards the common goal, the common good, which is really what Recipe for Peace Now does. We do mediation concepts, really, and then we add the concept, of course, which we are getting to, yes, people are asking, which we are getting to, we add the concept of having the food and the potluck, which makes a very neat transition and a neat way to call a time out, because it gives us something in common that's pleasant and convivial to do. But we're talking now about inner peace so that we can be better at being optimistic and seeing success. And Philip and quite a few other people have mentioned that if you want to enhance your optimistic qualities in your life in general, which will spill over into your, oftentimes it's not professional life, usually we're volunteers often, but you want to spill over into other aspects of your life, like to get communities together and to resolve issues and create accord, that in order to have a better attitude and a better inner peace, a lot of people are saying to get a pet. Get a pet, get a dog or a cat or a pet. Pardon me. Pardon me, this is a live show. I can't take out the sneezes. My apologies. To get a pet. And, you know, Philip says that it gives you someone non-judgmental to talk to. Yes. You can discuss things with someone who will listen and will not argue with you, because pets don't argue. And Suni says that it's a great idea because pets treat you nice. And if you treat them nice, they give you unconditional love. And that's a self-fulfilling, it's a self-promoting, it's a very successful and very pleasant thing. And it makes you more optimistic. And several people now we've gotten on a pet theory, yes. But, you know, that's not something I would have thought about in this context. But I suppose it's a good point. And a lot of people, and Kyle has said it perhaps most succinctly, that if you get a pet, you're required to care for the pet, and you can't just not feed and groom and walk and like that just because you feel depressed or negative or not optimistic. Pets need care, and you can't just not do it. And they give you, indeed, someone to talk to. We'll go for that. That's a really interesting point. And now for our, this is like, well, we're all going to be better people, aren't we? And that's a good idea. And if we are more calm, more successful, more optimistic, it will spill over. Good point. And, you know, also in addition to that, there's one more idea before we get to the recipes. Yes, we are getting to them. We won't run out of time. That Ellen and others have put forward. And it is a very good idea. And it's also a good idea for practicing dealing with people who are you would not necessarily come in contact with, and practicing for making consensus and community. And it's a good practice skill. Ellen and others say that if you volunteer for the less advantaged, you will feel better about yourself, and you will be more optimistic and more successful in your mediation, in your seminars, in your workshops, and getting people together. Because, well, all right, this is how she puts it. She says that if you volunteer for the less advantaged, it will show you how good your life is. So I'm like, yes. But it will also give you a success in your personal life. You've done something nice for someone. Yes, it shows you how good your life is, and it also shows you how good it is to do something for someone else. And that will make you more optimistic, too. That's a very good point. And thank you all for all of your participation. That was really interesting because those were not, we went into areas that I would not have particularly thought of in actual specific regard to creating change. But that's an interesting point. You create change within yourself will make you more optimistic, to make you more of a positive thinker, and it will be better when you are hosting, when you are participating with other people, other groups, concerning the issues that you're trying to reach consensus on. What a good idea. Thank you all very, very much for all of your participation and all of your help. How interesting. Those were really interesting topics. Thank you very much. I learned something. It's a really good point. Hello. Now it's time for the recipe portion of our show, isn't it? And before that I do that, those of you who have been before, yes, you're already writing in, and thank you very much for your participation. I must indeed say what I always say before we start the food part, and that is whenever you are having a potluck, whenever people are bringing food, whenever food is being served, being provided in some way, it is very, very important to label the food. You ask people to do this ahead of time, and you also ask if anyone has any allergies, any dietary or religious restrictions concerning food. And when I say label, I don't mean just what it's called. I mean really say what's inside, what the ingredients are. Because you've got people who will have religious restrictions or dietary restrictions or actual allergic reaction restrictions to different things in food. Sometimes it's a condiment. Sometimes it's an ingredient that doesn't really show, that you can't really see. Very, very important to tell everyone about any kind of dietary, religious, or allergic restrictions. And very important to label everything because you don't want anyone to get sick or get offended or in any way not have a convivial time, because that's one of the ideas for it. We're not feeding people because they're hungry, really. We're doing it because it adds to the atmosphere of accord, of the atmosphere of we will get together and we will be able to talk with each other and break bread with each other, and we will reach consensus because we're already on good terms, you see? And that's the idea. And you all know that those of you who are returners, thank you very much for coming again. And those of you who are new, and of course, I believe I mentioned that if you wanted to hear prior shows, they are either on the website, the last five, recipeforpeacenow.com, or on the radio station, blog. The rest of them, including the last five, are archived on the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. So, but now we're going to get to the recipes, and you know that as the host, I think it is always a good idea to have some extra food and to have what I like to call a safe recipe available. And what's a safe recipe? Well, it's something that has not got a whole bunch of unusual ingredients. Most people are not allergic to the ingredients. And the ingredients are fairly obvious, and it's not such a long list that you lose track. Because, of course, we're going to list them in our labeling, right? Right. So this time, our safe recipe is just a basic lamb stew. Add what you like, different kinds of vegetables, whatever it is that you like. But this is a real basic recipe, and you can take it from there. And, of course, we're going to have a big bowl of nice, fluffy white rice to the side, or brown rice, whatever you like, but to the side plain, or pasta, something to put underneath the stew and so that people can take it and see what it is. So, we're going to have the lamb stew. We're going to have four stalks of celery that we're going to thick slice, six carrots, thick sliced, peel them, of course, four potatoes that we're going to peel and we're going to cube into nice big cubes, two large onions, rough chopped, 2 pounds of lamb that we're going to cut into cubes, nice pieces, four cloves of garlic, minced. Yes, I've been accused of putting a lot of garlic in things. These are all to be revised. You like less garlic, put in 2 cloves of garlic minced, and about a half teaspoon of ground allspice, which is in the spice aisle in the United States. It is kind of a mixture of different kinds of spices, ground allspice. And then we're going to have about 16 ounces of beef stock, which we're going to dilute with some water because we're going to use liquid to just cover the lamb and the vegetables in the pot. So we're going to place all of the ingredients. This is a really simple, really basic recipe. We're going to take all of these ingredients, all of them, and we're going to throw them in a pot and cover it with the liquid to about 2 inches above the ingredients. So that's the beef stock and some water, or more beef stock if you would like. But, of course, if you use all beef stock, it's going to make it a little more salty, so don't add salt until you taste it. We're going to throw it all in, all of it. Just plop it in right underneath the water, about 2 inches above, and we're going to cover it, big pot, we're going to cover it and cook it on a medium flame for about an hour. I like to take it and stir it and look at it, and also if you've got a lot of fat that rises to the top, I like to skim it off. And we're going to cook it until the meat and the vegetables are tender. And that's it. We're going to have stew, right? Now, it's not going to be a real thick stew or anything. You can add a little bit of flour. You know, you can revise this in any way. But look how simple that is. We have lovely vegetables, lovely lamb, some beef stock. Most people are not allergic or have dietary restrictions. And most people don't have a religious restriction to any of those ingredients. We put them all in. We cover it. We cook it for about an hour, stirring occasionally until everything is nice and soft, especially the meat. I like to skim off any fat that occurs on the top. Voila! Stew. Wonderful. And people are asking if they should brown the meat before they put it in. You certainly could. You could brown it in the pot beforehand with a little bit of oil and maybe the minced garlic also. That seals in the meat a little bit better. It is actually not necessary for this recipe, but of course you can revise it as you like. But look, that is our safe recipe, easy to do. Yes, you could do it the night before, And it everything that we see, everything that's in it can pretty much be seen, except for the allspice, the spice in it. And, of course, this stock will have some salt to it. So that is today's safe recipe. Now let's have an adventure recipe. It's not terribly adventurous, really, but it has something that I like to put in that sometimes people cannot eat, and that is sausage. This is a pork product, right? And meat, and it also has chilies. So, and those are things that aren't necessarily something that people are able to eat, and also it has a few ingredients that don't show, and that would be the chilies, yes? I'm going to call this a chili. It's actually kind of a bean stew because, quite frankly, it doesn't have any chili powder in it. You want to make it more chili-like? Well, that's what chili powder is for. You can always revise these recipes. So let's do this. We've got what I have called a meat and sausage chili. We've got two onions, coarsely chopped, three big cans, like a 16-ounce can, of navy beans or kidney beans. We're going to drain and pat dry because we don't want any of the juice in there. Yes, you can use fresh, of course, but you do know that you have to make them soft. Yes, you have to soak them. Two 16-ounce cans of beef broth, beef stock, really. Two tablespoons of minced garlic. Those are two cloves of garlic minced, really. A small, like a 6-ounce can of diced green chilies. In the United States, it's easy to come by. You could use jalapenos. Of course, if you want to make it less spicy, you take out the seeds, right? Whatever it is that you're using, even if they're fresh, think about the spiciness. And also, if you're using some sort of a canned product, a little, here they come in little jars. And I know this is a global show, so that may not be true other places. Whatever it is that you're using, drain it if you're going to use something that comes in, I'm going to call it brine, but you know what I mean. If it comes in a liquid, drain it real good, and I like to pat them dry. It keeps the mixture from getting kind of separated because of the excess juice. A tablespoon of ground cumin. 3 cups of, never mind cups. I'm going to give it a pound of ground beef and a pound of diced sausage. And then we're going to have a package of shredded cheddar cheese, like an 8-ounce package. That's going to go on the top. So that's a garnish. So what are we going to do? First, we're going to take the meat and the sausage, and then we're going to cook them in a big pot and until they're all browned and nicely mixed together. And then we're going to give them a nice drain so that they're not greasy, and we're going to set them aside for a second. We've got the beef and we've got the sausage now. They're cooked, right? So now in the same large pot, in a little bit of oil because we've wiped out the pot, right? Right, because we don't want to do this in a whole bunch of beef and sausage grease. We're going to cook the onion and with the minced garlic. And we're going to do it for about 5 minutes until they get somewhat translucent. They smell real nice. And we're also going to take one of the cans of beans and we're going to squish them. Sorry. We're going to mash them with a fork or with a potato masher. Well, really with a fork because they're too small for a potato masher. We're going to squish them because they're going to make I'm going to call it a chili. They're going to make the mixture thicker. They're not going to just be big beans. So we're going to add the mashed beans, the onions, the garlic, and the two remaining cans of beans that we've drained really thoroughly, right? The beef broth, the garlic, the green chilies, also drained very carefully, and the cumin, and we're going to bring them all to a boil and reduce the heat and cover and simmer for about half an hour. So it's all hot and it's all mixed through real nice. Now we've got the mixture, but we've still got the beef and the sausage on the side. We're going to stir them in and blend it real well and heat the whole thing so that it's hot, because our meat and our sausages have gotten kind of cold sitting on the side. But we don't need to cook it any longer because we have already cooked the beans and everything else beforehand. That's it. Isn't this a lovely recipe? It's delicious. Everybody really likes it. It makes a chili. It's a little bit spicy because of the chilies, but it doesn't have chili powder in it. And I think that's kind of nice because it's got the diced green chilies and the beans and the beef and the sausage, and it all blends together very beautifully. It's delicious. You can alter the spiciness of it depending on your, well, depending on who's coming, depending on your audience, right? And everyone likes it, but it is our adventure recipe. Why? Yes, because it's got sausage and meat in it. And you need to know if people can have it. And also the chilies and the cumin. People are mentioning that cumin is not a real common spice and that it needs to be carefully labeled. And that is undoubtedly true. I use it a lot, but yes, it is not particularly common. Anyway, that is our adventure recipe. It is delicious, and it smells wonderful when you reheat it in the room, which is another good point about it. So, we have now come to the end of our show. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank you all for all of your participation. Oh, and I have several questions about the recipe. Several people are asking if they can make the recipe, how to make the recipe vegetarian, or whether they can use tofu. The answer is, if you take out the meat and the sausage, you will automatically have a vegetarian. You'll have kind of a beef, you'll have kind of a bean soup type thing. I guess it's still a chili. Yes, you can use tofu. Yes, you can add some more vegetables to it. I am afraid that the key is that whatever it is that you're adding or subtracting, when you're adding something, it needs to be drained. Tofu, at least the tofu that I've seen, and you know that I don't actually cook with tofu very much, the tofu cannot be wet. You have to drain it. And if you are spicing it up or spicing it down, depending on what you're putting in, yes, people are asking about chicken and all sorts of things. Do whatever it is that you will want, but whatever it is that you put in, since you're mixing the protein in at the last moment, the chicken, the beef, whatever it is you're using, make sure that you have thoroughly cooked it. If it's something that's fairly bland, you might want to spice it, and that you drain it so that it's not runny, because you don't want the thing to have a runny consistency. So that's the ticket, yes. And that's true of all of these recipes. Do as you like, but remember to thoroughly cook whatever it is. And if you don't want to have the oils from the meat to drain it. So, yes, so that's the adventure recipe. So as we were saying, thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. Thank you for participating. If you would like to send in an email, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is recipeforpeacenow.com. The last five shows, including this one in about 5 minutes or something, will be archived on the website. The other shows, all of them, including the last five, are archived on the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you very much for coming, and please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.